Alan Bennett, The Uncommon Reader. I feel, ma'am, that while not exactly elitist, it sends the wrong message. It tends to exclude. Exclude? Surely most people can read. They can read, ma'am, but I'm not sure that they do. Then, Sir Kevin, I am setting them a good example. She smiled sweetly while noting that these days Sir Kevin was much less of a New Zealander than when he had first been appointed, his accent now with only a tincture of that Kiwi connection about which Her Majesty knew he was sensitive and of which he did not wish to be reminded, Norman had told her. Another delicate issue was his name. The private secretary felt burdened by his name. Kevin was not the name he would have chosen for himself, and disliking it made him more aware of the number of times the Queen used it, though she could hardly have been aware of how demeaning he felt it. In fact, she knew perfectly well. Norman again. But to her, everybody's name was immaterial, as indeed was everything else, their clothes, their voice, their class. She was a genuine Democrat, perhaps the only one in the country. To Sir Kevin, though, it seemed that she used his name unnecessarily often, and there were times when he was sure she gave it a breath of New Zealand, that land of sheep and Sunday afternoons, and a country which, as the head of the Commonwealth, she had several times visited and claimed to be enthusiastic about. "It's important," said Sir Kevin, "that Your Majesty should stay focused." "When you say stay focused, Sir Kevin, I suppose you mean one should keep one's eye on the ball." "Well, I've had my eye on the ball for more than 50 years, so I think these days one is allowed the occasional glance to the boundary." She felt that her metaphor had probably slipped a little there, not though that Sir Kevin noticed. "I can understand," he said, "Your Majesty's need to pass the time." "Pass the time?" said the Queen. "Books are not about passing the time. They are about other lives, other worlds. Far from wanting to pass, Sir Kevin, one just wishes one had more of it. If one wanted to pass the time, one could go to New Zealand." With two mentions of his name and one of New Zealand, Sir Kevin retired hurt. Still, he had made a point, and he would have been gratified to know that it left the Queen troubled, and wondering why it was that at this particular time in her life she had suddenly felt the pull of books. Where had this appetite come from? Few people, after all, had seen more of the world than she had. There was scarcely a country she had not visited, a notability she had not met, herself part of the panoply of the world. Why now was she intrigued by books, which, whatever else they might be, were just a reflection of the world, or a version of it? Books! She had seen the real thing. "I read, I think," she said to Norman, "because one has a duty to find out what people are like." A trite enough remark, of which Norman took not much notice, feeling himself under no such obligation, and reading purely for pleasure, not enlightenment, though part of the pleasure was the enlightenment, he could see that. But duty did not come into it. To someone with the background of the Queen, though, pleasure had always taken second place to duty. If she could feel she had a duty to read, then she could set about it with a clear conscience, with a pleasure, if pleasure there was, incidental. But why did it take possession of her now? This she did not discuss with Norman, as she felt it had to do with who she was and the position she occupied. The appeal of reading, she thought, lay in its indifference. There was something lofty about literature. Books did not care who was reading them, or whether one read them or not. All readers were equal, herself included. Literature, she thought, is a commonwealth. Letters a republic. Actually, she had heard this phrase, the Republic of Letters, used before at graduation ceremonies, honorary degrees and the like, though without knowing quite what it meant. At that time, talk of a republic of any sort she had thought mildly insulting, and in her actual presence, tactless to say the least. It was only now she understood what it meant. Books did not differ. All readers were equal, and this took her back to the beginning of her life. As a girl, one of the greatest thrills had been on VE night, when she and her sister had slipped out of the gates and mingled unrecognised with the crowds. There was something of that, she felt, to reading. It was anonymous, it was shared, it was common. And she, who had led a life apart now, found that she craved it. Here, in these pages and between these covers, she could go unrecognised. These doubts and self-questionings, though, were just the beginning. Once she got into her stride, it ceased to seem strange to her that she wanted to read, and books, to which she had taken so cautiously, gradually came to be her element. As some of you may know, over the last few years I have become an avid reader. Books have enriched my life in a way that one could never have expected. But books can only take one so far, and now I think it is time that from being a reader I become, or try to become, a writer. The Prime Minister was bobbing again, and the Queen, reflecting that this was generally what happened to her with Prime Ministers, graciously yielded the floor. A book, Your Majesty? Oh, yes, yes. Reminiscences of your childhood, ma'am, and the war, the bombing of the palace, your time in the WAAF. The ATS, corrected the Queen. The armed forces, whatever, the Prime Minister galloped on. Then your marriage, the dramatic circumstances in which you learned you were the Queen. It will be sensational. And, he chortled, there's not much doubt that it will be a bestseller. The bestseller, trumped the Home Secretary, all over the world. Yes, said the Queen, only, and she relished the moment, that isn't quite the kind of book one had in mind. That is a book, after all, that anyone can write, and several people have, all of them, to my mind, tedious in the extreme. No, I was envisaging a book of a different sort. The Prime Minister, unsquashed, raised his eyebrows in polite interest. Maybe the old girl meant a travel book. They always sold well. The Queen settled herself down. I was thinking of something more radical, more challenging. Radical and challenging, both being words that often tripped off the Prime Minister's tongue, but still he felt no alarm. Have any of you read Proust? Asked the Queen of the room. Somebody deaf whispered, Who? And a few hands went up, the Prime Minister's not among them, and seeing this, one young member of the Cabinet who had read Proust was about to put his hand up, but didn't, because he thought it would do him no good at all to say so. The Queen counted. 8, 9, 10. Most of them, she noted, relics of a much older Cabinet. Well, that's something, though I'm hardly surprised. Had I asked Mr. Macmillan's Cabinet that question, I'm sure a dozen hands would have gone up, including his. However, that's hardly fair, as I hadn't read Proust at that time either. I've read Trollope, said a former Foreign Secretary. One is glad to hear it, said the Queen, but Trollope is not Proust. The Home Secretary, who had read neither, nodded sagely. Proust is a long book, though. Water skiing permitting, you could get through it in the summer recess. At the end of the novel, Marcel, who narrates it, looks back on a life that hasn't really amounted to much and resolves to redeem it by writing the novel which we have just, in fact, read, in the process unlocking some of the secrets of memory and remembrance. Now, one's life, though one says it oneself, has, unlike Marcel's, amounted to a great deal. But like him, I feel nevertheless that it needs redeeming by analysis and reflection. Analysis, said the Prime Minister. And reflection, said the Queen. Having thought of a joke that he knew would go down well in the House of Commons, the Home Secretary ventured on it here. Are we to assume that Your Majesty has decided to write this account because of something you read in a book? And a French book at that? Ha ha! There were one or two answering sniggers, but the Queen did not appear to notice that a joke had actually been made, as it indeed it scarcely had. No, Home Secretary, but then books, as I'm sure you know, seldom prompt a course of action. Books generally just confirm you in what you have perhaps unwittingly decided to do already. You go to a book to have your convictions corroborated. A book, as it were, closes the book. Some of the councillors, long since out of government, were thinking that this was not the woman they remembered serving and were fascinated accordingly. But for the most part, the gathering sat in an uneasy silence, few of them having any idea what she was talking about, and the Queen knew it. "You're puzzled," she said, unperturbed. "But I promise you, you do know this is in your own sphere." Once again, they were in school and she was their teacher. To inquire into the evidence for something on which you have already decided is the unacknowledged premise of every public inquiry, surely. The youngest minister laughed, then wished he hadn't. The Prime Minister wasn't laughing. If this was to be the tone of what the Queen was planning to write, there was no telling what she was going to say. "I still think you would do better just to tell your story, ma'am," he said weakly. "No," said the Queen, "I'm not interested in facile reminiscence. It will, I hope, be something more thoughtful. Though, when I say thoughtful, I don't mean considerate joke." Nobody laughed, and the smile on the Prime Minister's face had become a ghastly grin. "Who knows," said the Queen cheerfully, "it might stray into literature." "I would have thought," said the Prime Minister, "that Your Majesty was above literature." "Above literature?" said the Queen. "Who is above literature? You might as well say one was above humanity." "But, as I say, my purpose is not primarily literary. Analysis and reflection." "What about those 10 prime ministers?" She smiled brightly. "There is much to reflect on there. One has seen the country go to war more times than I like to recall. That, too, bears thinking about." Still, she smiled, though if anyone followed suit, it was the oldest ones who had the least to worry about. "One has met, and indeed entertained, many visiting heads of state. Some of them unspeakable crooks and blackguards, and their wives not much better." This at least raised some rueful nods. "One has given one's white-gloved hand to hands that were steeped in blood and conversed politely with men who have personally slaughtered children. One has waded through excrement and gore. To be queen, I have often thought that the one essential item of equipment, a pair of thigh-length boots. One is often said to have a fund of common sense, but that's another way of saying that one doesn't have much else, and accordingly, perhaps I have at the instance of my various governments been forced to participate, if only passively, in decisions I consider ill-advised and often shameful. Sometimes one has felt like a scented candle sent in to perfume a regime, or errate a policy. Monarchy these days, just a government-issue deodorant. I am the Queen and the head of the Commonwealth, but there have been many times in the last 50 years when that has made me feel not pride, but shame. However," and here she stood up, "we must not lose our sense of priorities. And this is a party, after all. So before I continue, shall we now have some champagne?" The champagne was superb, but seeing that one of the pages doing the serving was Norman, the Prime Minister lost all taste for it and slipped along the corridor to the toilet, where he got on his mobile to the Attorney General. The lawyer did much to reassure him, and fortified by his legal advice, the Prime Minister was able to pass the message round the members of the Cabinet, so that when in due course Her Majesty came back into the room, it was a more resilient group that awaited her. "We've been talking about what you said, ma'am," began the Prime Minister. "All in good time," said the Queen. "One hasn't quite finished. I wouldn't want you to think that what I'm planning to write, and indeed have already started writing, is some cheap telltale life in the palace nonsense beloved of the tabloids. No, one has never written a book before, but one hopes that it will," she paused, "transcend its circumstances and stand on its own. A tangential history of its times, and you'll perhaps be reassured to learn, far from exclusively to do with politics or the events of one's life, I'd like to talk about books too, and people, but not gossip. I don't care for gossip. A roundabout book. I think it was E.M. Forster who said, 'Tell all the truth, but tell it slant. Success in circuit lies.' Or was it," she asked the room, "Emily Dickinson?" Unsurprisingly, the room did not answer. "But one mustn't talk about it, or it will never get written." It was no comfort to the Prime Minister to reflect that whereas most people, when claiming to want to write a book, would never get it written, with the Queen and her terrible sense of duty, it could be guaranteed that she would. "Now, Prime Minister," she turned to him gaily, "you were saying..." The Prime Minister rose. "Respectful as we are of your intentions, ma'am." The Prime Minister's tone was casual and friendly. "I think I have to remind you that you are in a unique position." "I seldom forget it," said the Queen. "Go on." "The monarch has, I think I'm right in saying, never published a book." The Queen shook her finger at him. A gesture she remembered in the moment of making it was a mannerism of Noel Coward's. "That isn't quite true, Prime Minister. My ancestor, Henry VIII, for instance, wrote a book, Against Heresy. That is why one is still called Defender of the Faith. So too did my namesake, Elizabeth I. The Prime Minister was about to protest. "No, one knows it isn't the same, but my great-grandmother Queen Victoria, she wrote a book also, Leaves from a Highland Journal. And a pretty tedious book it is too, and so utterly without offence as to be almost unreadable. It's not a model one would want to follow. And then, of course..." And the Queen looked hard at her First Minister. "There was my uncle, the Duke of Windsor. He wrote a book, A King's Story. The history of his marriage and subsequent adventures. If nothing else, that surely counts as a precedent. Furnished with the advice of the Attorney General on this very point, the Prime Minister smiled and almost apologetically made his objection. "Yes, ma'am, I agree, but the difference surely is that His Royal Highness wrote the book as Duke of Windsor. He could only write it because he had abdicated." "Oh, did I not say that?" said the Queen. "But why do you think you're all here?"